Chapter 8. How to Create an Insurgency, Part 1. Spring and Summer, 2003. The feeling of post-war impatience was the same at the Pentagon, recalled an officer who was on the joint staff at the time. There was a mindset by the first part of May, major combat operations are over, let's think about drawing down the force. From late spring to mid-summer 2003 was a time of meandering and drift for the U.S. occupation of Iraq. It took months for incorrect assumptions to begin to be discarded, and for commanders to recognize that large numbers of U.S. troops were going to be in Iraq for some time. In the 2 or 3 months of ambiguous transition, U.S. forces slowly lost the momentum and the initiative they had gained over an off-balance enemy, Major Isaiah Wilson later wrote. During this calm before the next storm, the U.S. Army has its eyes turned toward the ports, while former regime loyalists, FRL, and budding insurgents had their eyes turned toward the people. The United States, its army, and its coalition of the willing have been playing catch-up ever since. As the situation turned violent, some U.S. soldiers began to question why they were in Iraq. Motivation was not a problem during the initial stages. However, once we transitioned into SASO, Stability and Support Operations, the U.S. military term for peacekeeping, it became a problem. One Army lieutenant observed that summer on an internet discussion board for young officers. It didn't take much time before I realized that they were lacking any sense of purpose. They didn't know why they weren't going home, why they couldn't see their first child born, and why we were helping an ungrateful and hostile populace. Added an intelligence officer who was attached to a Navy SEAL unit at the time. The air went out of the tires almost overnight. Baghdad was falling apart in front of the eyes of the U.S. military, with buildings being looted and parents afraid to let their children outside. But no one had orders to do anything about it. Looking back several years later, Colonel Alan King, the head of civil affairs for the 3rd Infantry Division, spoke of April 2003 with a slow, chilled tone of horror in his voice. I got to Baghdad and was told, "You got 24 hours to come up with a Phase 4 plan." On the night of April 8, Colonel John Sterling, the chief of staff of the 3rd ID, came to me and said, "I just got off the phone with the Corps chief of staff, and I asked him for the reconstruction plan, and he said there isn't one. So you got 24 hours to come up with one." King was stunned. He had been asking for months for just such a plan, and had been told that when the time came, he would be given it. Lacking clear orders about what to do once in Baghdad, the 3rd ID more or less stayed in place in the capital. "You didn't find many dismounted patrols with the 3rd ID," recalled Jay Garner, a retired Army general and not one to lightly criticize his old peers. "They kind of stayed with their platforms, that is, their tanks and Bradley fighting vehicles." On April 6, Lieutenant Douglas Hoyt, a platoon leader with the 3rd ID, saw looters for the first time. "I remembered looking through the sights on my tank at people and trying to determine if they were hostile or not," he recalled later. "He didn't stop them. It was not our mission at the time." It wasn't just a lack of planning or guidance from civilians that led to the U.S. inertia. It also was a lack of understanding or interest among senior military commanders. The civilian leadership did not foresee the need for extensive Phase 4 operations, and thus did little planning beyond near-term relief, said one Pentagon official who was involved in wargaming the invasion plan, and who later quietly analyzed its failures. This was fine with the military, which had traditionally focused on Phase 3 operations, did not want to do Phase 4 operations, and figured that someone else would step in. Brigadier General David Fastabend told the story of reading an article in which a fellow Army general was quoted as saying that Army doctrine hadn't prepared him for what he faced in Iraq during the late spring of 2003. When he met this officer, Fastabend, who was involved in developing doctrine, that is, how to think about how to fight and operate, questioned him about that statement. "I don't understand why you said that," Fastabend said. "Look, in 1993 we introduced military operations other than war, and then we introduced the idea of full-spectrum operations. From 97 to 2001, we introduced the idea that operations are a seamless combination of offense, defense, stability, and support. How could you say that your doctrine didn't prepare you for what you experienced in Baghdad?" Yeah, Dave, I know, this officer responded. I read all that stuff. Read it many times and thought about it. But I can remember quite clearly, I was on a street corner in Baghdad smoking a cigar, watching some guys carry a sofa by, and it never occurred to me that I was going to be the guy to go get that sofa back.